The guy who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal. A sensational goal by the Hullamal captain, Mitchell van der Gij.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It's just unfortunate we never won anything.
He's in trouble if he kicks. The super sub has done it again.
It's not a choice anymore. You know, we're going to have to be much more effective in the transfer market, and everybody in the club knows that now.
Vukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Vukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Vukovic!
Everything, no matter what happens, we're privileged to be part of this club.
And here they come again, Rachel stretched, it's Hamlet again, Kuzmic committing himself, and he scores! It's 3-0 to Hullamal.
Yeah, obviously, being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Chance here for Hullamal. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Hello and welcome to the By the Man MFC podcast. Today, Matt Johnson joins regular Jay with Buster, still unfortunately absent due to illness. Welcome along, guys.
All right.
A very disappointing weekend for all associated with Motherwell Football Club. Confirmation of the playoffs. Now, a 2-1 defeat to St Mirren, Jay. It was an awful performance. We got exactly what we deserved. And it's just been a reoccurring theme this season. I've lost count of the amount of times that we've said that the team hasn't showed up, hasn't demonstrated the right qualities and the right attitude, and as a result, we get what we deserve.
Aye, it was spineless, clueless, cowardly, you know, whatever adjectives you want to use, it was just pretty poor. Getting into the game, it was kind of, you know, 50-50, is it expected, is it not expected? Obviously, on the one hand, you think that you're going to see a team of professional football players who are getting paid wages by your club. You assume they've got a bit of personal pride, if nothing else. And, you know, this was our last chance, our final, we said it like every week, but this was our big last chance cup final match. And we put in the same sort of performance that we did at Thistle, at New Douglas Park, and at various other times during the season. So, you know, it's not too unexpected because we've got previous this season, but I think, you know, most fans probably still had that little bit of hope that we could have at least looked like a side fighting for their lives. I mean, if you'd taken some neutrals along to that game who had no idea about Scottish football and said to them, right, you're about to watch one football side that has been relegated for the last few weeks. You know, they're down, they've got nothing to play for, and the other team is going to be a team fighting for their lives. They've got a glimmer of hope. If they can get a win today, then they might actually manage to avoid the playoffs. If you then let the neutrals watch the game, there's absolutely no chance they would have said that we were the side who still had a chance of staying up. St Mirren wanted the win far more than we did. And if it had finished at 1-1, if they hadn't, you know, got the winner in injury time, then it would have been 2 points dropped as far as they were concerned. So it was just really, really poor. But as I said, I suppose it's to be expected this season.
Matt, at 1-0 up, you would really think against a team that already relegated, we would have had the ability to see the game out, wouldn't you?
Oh, you would think so. I mean, I'm in a strange position this season, having to work a lot of Saturdays. So missing a lot of games is like, this is the first time in my life it's happened, you know? And it's so frustrating when I'm trying to keep track of what's going on. And my boss gives me a call, he's a Mull fan as well, and he's, that's us, we're on the way, you know, we're 1-0 up, we're like, good, good, good. Only 15 minutes, 10 minutes ago or whatever. And, you know, I've just not seen the poor performances that everybody else has seen. The games that I've been to have been the midweek games at Firth Park that were played really well, outstanding. So you think, you go 1-0 up, you've got 10 minutes to go, cushy. There's nothing to worry about. And then my boss is phoning me up saying, oh, they've just equalised. And I'm going, how can we not see a game out against a team who were absolutely battered just a few weeks previously? It was going to border on embarrassing that night for St Mirren. They were so far away from the standard we were playing at. So how we can go for that level and slip so far down in a game where even professional pride should see you through, I just can't fathom it out, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I go to the Friday night game against Accies, and then the St Mirren game, and then Kilmarnock, and you're talking an aggregate score of 13-1 against teams round about us on the table. We should not be in that position. And yet we still managed to drag ourselves back down by our own volition. It's our own fault. There is absolutely no two ways about that. Jay's right. This is Motherwell's fault. We've put ourselves in this position. It's not because everybody else is better than us. And no way, to what I've saw, we have got a decent side there when they want to play. But you've got to question why we can't raise our game for such a massive, massive game as that one on Saturday. And all the other games we've had before. We've had chance after chance after chance to pull ourselves right up that table. And we've passed every one of them up. That's shocking, actually. When you look at the league table, there's no way we should be in that position. So there is questions needing asked to the attitude and the commitment. There's no two ways about that.
Jay, I had spoke last week about the inclusion of Simon Ramsden, and that kind of shored up the defence a bit. I was proven to be so far off the mark on Saturday, given we were opened up time and time again. Alan Gow's missing the first half, the one where they had the ball round the goalkeeper, and Long eventually made a fantastic save. The first goal that we lost, an absolute disaster. So unorganised at the back. Not want to single out figures, but I suppose I'm about to do that. Stephen McManus, former Scotland captain, played in the Champions League with Celtic, played at Middlesbrough. A very experienced campaigner. Seems to lack all sorts of leadership and ability to try and organise the back four. Stephen Hamill's there. I think he's the only one that can really be exempt from criticism, given his performances haven't been fantastic when he's been fit this season, but he's certainly the best of a bad bunch there. It's just, really, some of these guys just shouldn't be playing in the top league in Scotland. Absolutely appalling performances week in, week out. The defence, it's been an Achilles heel all season, but Saturday was really, really bad.
Yeah, I think one thing that Barraclough has done is make us better going forward. We create more chances, we've got more attacking players, but at the back, we are still an absolute nightmare. We're an absolute bomb scare. And you look at the players that have played there, you've got obviously at full-back, Straker and Hamill on one side, Law, Reid, Ferguson, Watt, these kind of guys, Ramsden on the other side. And then centre-halves, you've had Lang's been in there, Kerr's been in there, O'Brien's obviously been in there. And you can probably pick faults in all of these players, or maybe, you know, criticise certain performances. But the one constant throughout pretty much the entire season is Stephen McManus. And I think that has to be questioned. You know, he is, as you said, a thoroughly experienced international player who should be organising, who should be, you know, leading by example. And he's been found wanting time and time again. And it relates to the fact that we also are void of leaders in the team. I mean, how often do you see, I think Scott McDonald did it when he first came in. You saw him sort of constantly talking to Erwin. That seems to have died away a wee bit. We're no leaders on the park whatsoever. I include Keith Lasley in that. In fact, this season, the only time I can genuinely remember seeing a player, you know, barking orders and pulling players up when they've been playing poorly or not putting effort in, was Dom Thomas at Dens Park when we were getting hammered. I mean, that's a 19-year-old kid, and yet he was the one who was actually organising and leading by example and barking orders at people. We're completely lacking in leadership and organisation, especially at the back. And it's telling that we are absolutely, you know, as I said, Saturday, you look at the goal we lost, you look at the chances St Mirren created, you know, we would have been as well just going with two at the back. I mean, it was pointless. Our defence is an absolute bomb scare, and it's a big, big part of why we are where we are.
You touched on there that we've looked better going forward. I think Scott McDonald has played a part in that. Matt, I don't know if you've had the chance to see his red card again. Sports Scene was one to be watched through your fingers last night, to be perfectly honest. But it's a bit of madness from an experienced professional. That could rule them out of the last game of the season and the two playoff fixtures, basically making them completely redundant to us.
Yep, and if you remember, Scott McDonald done that first time round as well. We were in a dodgy situation up at Dunfermline, and he got himself sent off, which meant he missed important games, and we only just survived with the skin of our teeth that season. But in his defence, and I've no jumped to Scott McDonald's defence much, but I don't think he should be here after the way he left Mull. I bear a grudge that way. It's just the way I am. But I'll give his due. He's a good player. He's added something to the team since he came in. He's got that wee nasty streak, which you like when it's on your side, I have to say, because you see it far too often on the other side. We like players who get into people, to put it bluntly. But on Saturday, I don't think that was a deliberate elbow on the boy. I think he was trying to hold him off. He had a look to see where the player was, and I think his intention was just to hold him off. I don't think his intention was to deliberately elbow him. He's caught him in the face, there's not two ways about that. But I don't think it was a deliberate elbow to cause the boy damage. I think he was just trying to hold him off. So if he gets a 3-game ban for that, then that just sums up the authorities for me. He always comes down hard on our players.
I get where you're coming from, but the way that he left the park was stupid as well. You've been set off. You're not going to change anyone's mind.
No, that's true, but in that situation, I mean, even when I was playing amateur football, you get caught up in a game so much, and you can understand why he's getting frustrated at that, because, like I say, I don't think it was a deliberate elbow, and it's been called as a deliberate elbow, I think, by the fourth official, from what I could gather. I would have done the same. If the fourth official calls that as a deliberate elbow, he needs to tell, you're wrong. And I wouldn't be too hard on him for berating the fourth official. If somebody deserves something, then fair dues. I think he was harshly judged. It was probably a sending off because he's caught the guy in the face, and he wasn't in control of his arm. But to suggest it was deliberate, no, I don't go with that. And I can forgive him in a way, because he'll be as frustrated as everybody. You know, he's brought up here to do a job, and he's a guy who I think does have that professional pride to try and get the result for us. Whether it's, you know, we want it because we're Motherwell fans, but he's a player who I believe would have the pride in his own performance and his ability to try and get Motherwell out of this, and he can see that going down the tubes, and that can be frustrating for a player as well, I'm sure.
Motherwell said they're going to appeal the sending off, Jade. Do you hold out much hope of that appeal being successful?
I don't know. It's an interesting one. I agree with Matt there. I think it's a very soft red card. I think he's got his arms up, holding off the defender. He's made contact with his face. I saw on the BBC, the gossip section today, that the St Mirren players said that he should get off with it because it wasn't deliberate. The problem is that it's not, you know, if you appeal it, you're not appealing a last-ditch challenge where the referee has missed a touch on the ball and then TV evidence can prove that the ball was won or anything like that. It's, you know, proving that something isn't meant, particularly when it's, you know, striking someone in the face in that way, then I think that's really, really difficult. So I'm not surprised that we're going to try and appeal it. I mean, there's no reason not to, because, you know, if he's suspended for 3 games, then he's on his way anyway, so we might as well appeal it. But I don't hold out much much hope that the red card will be rescinded, because it's just one of those ones where you can't really prove that it isn't meant, essentially, and that's what we would need to do in order for it to be rescinded. So I'd be surprised if it is rescinded, even though it was a soft red card.
It's good for the old conspiracy theories, eh?
Aye, well, that's it.
We're not going to let us off it if we're going to face Rangers in the playoff final, are they?
That's it.
Just one last talking point from Saturday. The goalkeeper, George Long, looking at the goal again last night, the first goal, he could have done absolutely nothing about the second one, that's for sure. His positional sense and his command of his penalty area is very poor for a guy of his size and stature. Jay, I don't really believe that Dan Twardzik made as many mistakes as Long has in his short time in goals, and he's made 80-odd appearances for Sheffield United as well, so he doesn't come here completely inexperienced. It's not really a move that's worked out, given our previous success with goalkeepers in and loan.
think it's probably one of those where there's not a great deal of difference between Dan Twardzig and George Long. I think I'd probably agree with you. I think that Twardzig was singled out at times for making the odd mistake, you know, up at Dens Park. He obviously wasn't the best at cross balls. But he more than made up with that with some of his saves, including in one-on-ones. So I think although Twardzig wasn't the best keeper around, I don't see George Long as being any better. And, you know, if you were to sit and maybe analyse the season, you might be right. He might have caused, you know, more goals conceded by mistakes. One thing that I think that maybe gets overlooked in this is I've no reason to sort of pinpoint this has been a problem because I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but, you know, Gordon Marshall is the goalkeeping coach. In his time at the club, well, in recent seasons, he's, you know, he had a big part in signing Gunnar Nielsen because he thought Gunnar Nielsen was, you know, going to be the next best goalkeeper in Scotland or whatever. Like, you know, we absolutely had to sign Gunnar Nielsen on the recommendation of Gordon Marshall. We gave him a big deal and we saw how that panned out. He's Dan Twardzig, when he came in on loan first time around, looked really, really good, really, really assured. And, you know, if you want to pick holes in his performances, maybe his performances did dip when he was playing regularly after he signed for us. George Long came in, you know, as he said, he played, you know, 80-odd appearances for Sheffield United. Apparently he's highly rated by the fans down there. And yet, he seems to have kind of drifted away in performance as well. So, you know, as Gordon Marshall having an effect on these guys? You know, I think one of the young goalkeepers has just been released as well. You know, so as much as George Long, I think he's a decent enough keeper. I mean, you know, you said there he pulled off an absolutely fantastic save on Saturday, but he is prone to a lot of errors and they seem to be creeping in more and more as the season goes on. And I think you could probably find similarities between him and Twardzig in that regard.
Matt, I suppose it kind of goes hand in hand, doesn't it, with an unsettled, unconfident back four and then not a particularly steady goalkeeper behind them just now. It's a bit of a recipe for disaster.
It is. I mean, I felt bringing the goalkeeper in was one of the areas we weren't really needing it, because I quite like Dan, if I'm perfectly honest. I know he got slaughtered for a couple of goals he lost. I mean, some of them were just his height. You know, he just couldn't reach up to some of the goals that he lost. And it looked to me as if the manager was making a statement by bringing in a big laddie like Long. He said, it looked to me he wanted a big commanding goalkeeper, big presence in that Goldmouth. But, you know, he's handling, I mean, you look back at the Aberdeen game, for instance, we were winning that game, in my opinion, until he punched that one in the net and then he went walkabouts for the second goal. So that these kind of things, they can be turned around moments in your season, couldn't they? You know, if you're on the verge of a great result and you literally throw the points away, that can really shape your season. So I agree with you. I don't think it's worked out the way the manager thought it would anyway. If we'd stuck with Twardzig's, then who knows? It's all a spots of maybes, really, isn't it? I think we're just looking for things now. See, well, if we've done that, if we've done this, but the fact is, I don't think Twardzig should just have been dropped the way he was dropped. I think bringing in a keeper to keep him on his toes, maybe, to say, look, we're not going to play Nielsen, but you're certainly not getting an easy time at here. Maybe that would have been a better course of action rather than just dropping him the way he did. I don't know. But Long certainly hasn't been the commanding presence that I believe he was brought in to be. That's my opinion of it anyway.
Would you say it's possibly now the situation where it would be a risk to bring towards it back? I know the Thistle game on Saturday is a dead rubber. Is that maybe an opportunity to bring him back in and boost his confidence, or is it too much of a risk going into two season defining games?
In terms of Saturday, I don't think it's a risk on Saturday because there's nothing to play for. Put him in on Saturday and maybe give Long that wee jag and say, look, your place isn't secure. Nobody's place should be secure on a football side anyway. So maybe it might be a shout on Saturday to say, right, Dan, in you go. If you prove you're good enough, you've got a chance of playing in these playoff games. And that keeps both of them on their toes then. Who knows? But like, I'm a Twardzig fan. I was the first time he came round, and I know he's not quite been as as solid as we maybe thought he was in those games. I mean, he couldn't keep that up anyway. He had a fantastic record when he came in on loan. You know, I think it was only Howard Samarov was up there with him in my time as a Motherwell fan. So that was just impossible to keep that going. But I still rate him. I still think Twardzik's a good keeper. And Saturday might just be an opportunity for the manager to shake things up a wee bit and make a statement to everybody and say nobody's place is secure for these playoff games, boys. Everyone needs to perform. And I would actually go right through the team then and do the same thing. I would shake a few of them up on Saturday and say, you're playing for your places here. If you're wanting to play in these big, big games, then you need to show us that you're up to it. There's some talk about the guys on loan don't really care that much and all that, but like I've said before, the professional pride should be spurring these guys on to want to be a part of keeping Motherwell in the top division. Because like it or not, it's a massive, massive thing for us. Financially, never mind anything else. I know we've got like good days out and all that, but financially it's a massive thing to be staying in the Premier League, so I'm quite sure that all the guys would want to be seen as having played their part in the final two games and the playoffs.
Oh, I certainly. I'll turn it round in the loan players as well, that a lot of these guys, their future at their parent clubs is very uncertain too, so they're perhaps playing for a move, whether it be to Motherwell or to someone else in Scotland or potential suitors in England. So I think there's plenty to play for these guys, and if they don't realise that, then they're thick, basically.
Well, maybe that's why they're out on loan, because they haven't realised that. You know, sometimes it takes players a few years to realise just what they have at their, you know, in their disposal there. If they've got ability and they don't quite hit the heights that they could do because of their attitude, once they're maybe 27, 28, they're going to look back at themselves and go, you know, maybe if I'd done this, maybe if I'd done that. So you sort of hope that these guys would recognise that you're out on loan for a reason. It's not because somebody thinks you're rubbish. It's because somebody says, right, go there and get some experience and then come back and see if it benefits you. You know, all these things are done for a reason. You don't just discard players and put them out on loan to get them off the wage bill. That's not the way these things work. These boys are there because they have got something, and their parent club wants them to get experience and come back and use that experience at their club. So they have got something to play for. And if they're not doing it, then that'll come back and haunt them, I dare say. So I think the quicker some of them realise that they've got as much at stake as there is for Motherwell Football Club, then it would be the better for everybody concerned.
Jay, Matt touched upon it there, shaking the team up for not just the Thistle game, but also the playoffs. Is that something that you would agree with, given the so-called need for wholesale changes in the side just now?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't even use the Thistle game as a chance for players to stake a claim. I would just say to players, right, you know, a few of the younger boys, you're playing in the playoffs. You've got the Thistle game to sort of bed yourself in the team, get your confidence up, because at the end of the day, there's no point in giving players, you know, our so-called established first team experienced players have shown time and time again that particularly away from home, they just don't have it in them. They don't have the bravery. They're not prepared to stand up and be counted. And I think we would probably fare a little better getting into the game, at least the away leg, with sort of the enthusiasm and the energy and the desire that some of the young boys would hopefully bring to the side, because, you know, that's our biggest enemy at the moment, our biggest problem. We're not a bad side, as we've touched upon, but we are at the back, but, you know, going forward we can score goals. But there's just no determination or grit or whatever you want to call it. And I would feel more content and more comfortable getting into these games, bringing in a bit of the energetic, enthusiastic younger players to replace the guys who have let us down time and time again.
Matt, for all the doom and gloom, there is still hope, isn't there, against the Rangers poor against Queen of the South, sneak through 3-2 in aggregate. I've not seen a great deal of Hibs. Generally when I've seen them, they've been hammering Rangers, which is always a pleasant watch. I think though, over two legs, we'd fancy our chances against either side.
I think we would, definitely. I've watched some of the Championship games involving Rangers and I've turned them off very, very quickly, because there's not a great deal of quality on show. I think the Rangers have put out the best team in the playoffs, in my opinion. I think Queen of the South would have posed us more problems. So I'm happy with that result yesterday. I also feel Hibs will beat Rangers. I predicted all along that we would beat Rangers in a playoff final since about October time. So I have to stick by that. But, you know, when I look at it, I think Hibs are a better side. I think they would pose us more problems with their style of play, especially at Easter Road and their defence. So, you know, looking at that, maybe it'd be better if we got the Rangers in the final. And like I say, I would finally get to see Billy Mochnie tread the turf at Fir Park. My life as a football fan would be complete then. Once I see that guy, I think he is a starter, an absolute class act. He came on yesterday for 5 minutes and he provided the three most hilarious bits of entertainment that I've seen for a long while with some of his attempts at playing football. First of all, he didn't even have his socks on when he was going on the park. Did you see that?
McCall was going absolutely taunto because he'd obviously told him to get ready and either his English failed him for a few minutes or he just couldn't be arsed coming on.
But I mean, who sits on the subs bench with his socks or top on? He's pulling his socks off, then he puts his boots on, then he puts his top on. I'm like, does he think he's still in the changing room? That's hilarious. And then, the foul they gave away and got booked for after 2 minutes on the park was hilarious. All he needed to do was just step back because his defending partner had already taken care of it. And then he ran away up the park and just passed the ball back to the keeper. Everybody's looking for a cross into the box or take it into the corner. He wastes some time. And he passes the ball straight to the Queen of the South keeper. For about 25 yards out. Absolutely brilliant. I can't wait to see him. And I hope that the Rangers get through just so have that entertainment when it comes to the 31st of May.
I liked his shot towards the end as well, where he was almost heading for the corner and then decided, no, I'm just going to shoot from 45 yards and see how it goes. I thought someone was going to run on and lamp him at that stage.
I think that was a pass back I was talking about. It was supposed to be a shot, but it just trundled into the keeper's arms. Absolutely brilliant. His decision making is deplorable. I cannot believe that he's still got a contract. They must have given him a 3-year contract when he first joined, did they?
Well, I don't know.
Because there is no way that man would get another contract anywhere. Surely not. Even in the third division, I thought he was atrocious. I thought he got showed up when he was playing in the first season. But I can't wait. That's what I'm looking forward to most about the playoffs, I think. Him coming out of Fir Park, superb.
Jay, it feels after such a good season last season, why do we have to play another two games this season? It seems never ending, and I think looking ahead to Saturday against Thistle, it's just one that we need to get out of the road. But a positive result is important too. It gives us just a wee bit of momentum and to kind of try and eradicate some of the memories created by Saturday.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think, you know, a lot of talk goes into whether it'll be Hibs or Rangers we play in the final, but our biggest enemy is ourselves. It's our mentality, particularly away from home. You know, even just on the point, I mean, Rangers, if we play Rangers in the final, Rangers are terrible. I mean, Queen of the South should have beaten them yesterday. You know, Gavin Riley went through with the keeper to beat, absolutely fluffed these lines. That would have been Queen of the South 2 goals ahead. They probably would have went on and seen it out. So I think if Rangers get to the final, I think I would fancy our chances man for man. But our biggest problem is our mentality, particularly away from home. You know, we have to go away in that first leg, and you know, God knows how that could go based on how we've been playing the last few away games. So it is important that we put in a decent performance on Saturday, hopefully get a result, and then at least you've got something there, something tangible to sort of look at and cling to and give you a little bit of confidence going into these games, because, you know, it really is now, we've said it for, you know, the last 4 or 5 weeks going into every game, you know, this is our last chance, this is it, make or break, but, you know, it doesn't get any more last chance than the playoff final, so, you know, we need to do something because there's just not enough being shown on the park away from home to suggest that, you know, a two-legged tie is going to work out in our favour.
Les Hutchison, back in town, MJ, well, I think it was a kind of 5-month sabbatical, friend of the podcast, Les Hutchison, speaking to Clyde One last week, was talking about there wouldn't be any need for financial change at the club. Aye. Or there would be no off-the-field personnel. Aye. Made redundant in the case of relegation. couldn't have been a very pleasant experience for Mr. Hutchison coming over and seeing what was a heartless, spineless performance in Saturday. No. You've got to hope that doesn't affect his decision making, and he's still confident of things going forward, because despite the major upheaval that Ian Barraclough's brought to the club, and both his own football staff and playing staff, results haven't changed very much, have they?
No, but like I said earlier, the games I saw recently at home, where the aggregate score was only 13-1, shows that we've got something. There is something in that squad there. We just don't get it on a regular enough basis off them. And the jury's still out on Barraclough, but I'm certainly no one who's calling for his head. I likened him to Jim Gannon when he first arrived, and I know Jim Gannon's got the support quite a bit. But I've always voiced my support for the things that Jim Gannon done here. Not that, you know, later on he proved a bit of a nutcase, but, you know, he turned this club around in the playing side. And subsequent managers, right up to McCall, still felt the benefit of Jim Gannon's playing staff, the people he brought in. So I looked at his background as kind of similar to that, and I was hoping that we'd maybe get the same kind of improvements in the quality of players that was coming in and how they would play and stuff like that. It's not quite worked out that way. But there are signs there that he's got some good things going. But come the end of the season, there's going to be a lot of changes. Whatever happens, people out of contract, people on loan, stuff like that. But there's, you know, I've had a couple of people talking about Les Hutchison who know him through different areas, when family or work, previous work experience with him or whatever. You know, and the feedback for them is that the guy's in it for a long term. He is genuinely not going to walk away for this. And he certainly wouldn't walk away just on the strength of a few poor performances. He'll just probably look on that as more of a challenge and, you know, try and work closer with Barraclough to try and make sure we get the people in who can do the business for this football club. So I'm not really worried if we go down, if I'm perfectly honest. I said earlier that I quite fancy a few good days out. I mean, I've not been to Dumbarton's new stadium for a start. That's a positive. You know, there's always bright sides to everything, no matter what happens. And I believe Hutchison, when he says there won't be any need for big financial upheavals, yes, we'll need to get rid of a few. And I would like to think that the bigger the earners were tough to go, because basically they've no way earned their money this year. So there's no great loss there. I would like to see his restructure putting an emphasis on the youth. All Motherwell fans like to see young lads coming into the team, local boys getting in there and doing their bit. If it came here, you know, that would be the right way to go. So you don't need to shell out pots of money, because I think we've got the quality that could get us back up. But, you know, hopefully we don't come to that. It's just Les just making sure that everybody's not going to panic if the worst does come to the worst, sort of thing, you know. I take it for that side anyway. I think he's just saying, look, doesn't matter what happens, we will be okay. And I believe Les will stick by that. So we can put that to the side and just concentrate on trying to get the right result in the playoff final.
Just going back to what you said there, Sparrow, about results under Barraclough. I mean, they haven't improved to a great deal that were, you know, any higher than 11th. Obviously, we are where we deserve to be. But, you know, if you actually go and look at the results under Barraclough have improved. We had that terrible run. Our home form's now really good. I think it's something like, I don't know, I think Barraclough has won something like 38% of the points he could have won, and McCall only won about 20%. So, you know, he's almost won, you know, double the points available as McCall did. So he has improved. As I said, he's improved as going forward. But there still is that big, massive question marks over the defence. And the mentality is still utterly horrendous. I said a few weeks ago, the only way you can really combat such a horrible, horrible mentality that's rife throughout the full squad is probably with the clear-out that's going to happen in the summer. So as much as I agree that Barraclough could have done better and probably should have done better up until now, he still has improved the results that we were getting under McCall.
I'm pretty sure it was that and killing badgers that you suggested, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The thing is for me, though, and maybe just goes longer in the memory, that he's lost almost every one of our must-win away games, and that's that's really, really been to his detriment. Like, any time you take a big support, the expectations there, another great atmosphere on Saturday, and just such a letdown. There's nothing to kind of spark the fans into life, and that's what frightens me going into this away playoff, that if we put in another substandard display, as you suggested, it could be out of our hands by the second leg. We've got to start responding to losing goals much better as well, because from 1-1 on Saturday, there was only one team that was going to win it.
Oh no, I agree. I do agree that he could have done, there's games where he could have done more. There's been questions over his tactics at times. Sometimes his decision making in terms of substitutions and stuff isn't the best. But I think that to blame Barraclough mainly for what's went on over since he came in, I think, is to completely sidestep the real issue, which is the players, the mentality of the players. You can be the biggest man, you know, best man manager, the most best motivator in the world, but if you come in to a team that seems to be full of, you know, guys who either aren't interested or don't have the bravery, you know, we're a team of cowards, basically. That's it. We're a team of absolute cowards. So if we go away and we need to win a game, we just can't do it. We don't have the ball, and we just collapse. And it needs to take more than simply, you know, Barraclough putting his arm around a couple of players' shoulders or kicking a few players up the arse. I think that he needs that clear out before he can fully judge him. Yes, he could have probably done more, but I seriously doubt if, you know, Jose Mourinho could come in and could get a great reaction from this bunch of players. I think the blame squarely has to be at the feet of the particularly the more experienced, established first team squad players who simply haven't been interested this season. So yes, Barraclough has undoubtedly got his faults, he's made his mistakes, but I think to put the blame solely on him is a complete misjudgment, a complete error of judgment. I think the players are where they deserve to be, regardless of what Barraclough has done.
No, I wasn't singling them out. I realise it's a combination of many factors, but I certainly don't believe that his appointment has been anywhere near a success, or even just a 5 out of 10 performance that would have steered us clear of the playoffs, because at the end of the day, Ross County should never have been able to catch us. If we had taken the points that we needed to from the big games, we wouldn't be in this bother. Even if we took half the points from the big games that he's lost, we would have stayed up. So it's massively disappointing in that regard, but as I say, that attitude's been stinking all season, so it's... And as I started the show with, we've got what we deserved completely, but I just hope we don't get what we deserve as the end outcome as well.
I think if it comes to that, then, you know, we just need to accept it, because we know fine well that it's our own fault, and everybody just needs to put their hands up and take responsibility. You don't get a lot of that in football. You always get people trying to blame other folk, and you know, see, when we were doing quite well, when Ross County were doing brilliant. Remember, Ross County went on, what was it, 8 games in a row they won or something like that?
They had something like 26 or 27 points out of a possible 33. It was an incredible run.
It was an incredible run. You know what, after every game, they were coming into the dressing room to find out that we'd won as well. And they couldn't shake us off. So, there was a spell there where we were hanging on doggedly. And it just took one result, and that's it sort of tipped it in Ross County's favour. But it was week after week after week, my mates were saying to me, oh, we won, aye, but oh, here's Ross County won again. But I was looking at it for the other side. Ross County's coming in after winning again, and an unprecedented run of victories for a club of their stature, and they still couldn't shake us off. They must have been cursing us upside down, up in Dingwall as well. So, you know, it wasn't all doom and gloom. I know there's been pitiful performances for them, but it wasn't the entire doom and gloom. We had a spell where we were actually doing really well, and, you know, we let ourselves down badly. Aye, there's no getting away for that, but we've done that for day one this season, let ourselves down badly. It's not just these last couple of games. So I would have hoped that the new signings, they would really needed to settle in quicker, the guys that came in on loan as well. But you don't get that in football, do you? When you bring in a lot of players, you don't get a settled team in the next two or three games. It takes longer than that, and that's been a big factor as well. I think the fact that we had so many new players in, it took so long before we did start to get points on the board again.
Aye, that's it. January's a hard time to bring in new faces as well, especially when you're doing
it. Very difficult. You can't bring in big numbers in the summer and expect to kick off right away, never mind do it in January, when, you know, these guys have maybe not played for how many weeks, and then they're thrown into a new team and expected to perform. It just doesn't happen. That's not the way football works. But let's see, I think Barraclough, once he gets this clear out in the summer, whatever division we're in, that's when he'll be able to be judged properly. I know it's an old cliched saying and all that. You've got to wait until he gets his own team. He's got half his own team in there already. 7 or 8 guys were his choosing. And some of them have worked, some of them haven't worked. But it'll be next year before anybody can seriously say he's either up to the job or he's not up to the job. Split opinion at the moment, obviously. But I'll look further back for the reasons behind that. I think that squad was allowed to go stale by the previous team, the previous management team. They didn't do what they should have been doing, and they left us in a bad state. Get back to Mark McGee, he done the same thing. He ran the team down into the ground and then left us in the lurch, and they left it to somebody else to try and pick us back up. So I'm hopeful that Barraclough's a man that can do that, he can pick us back up. But you know, he's come in at a difficult situation. He's not coming in a level playing field with everybody else when he started off, and he said to try and catch up very, very quickly, and it hasn't worked out that way. But I don't think that means he's been a failure. Very much the other way. I think he's done well to keep us in there battling and keep on the coattails of Ross County, because I defy anybody in that league to keep on the coattails of Ross County if they were trying to. Because Ross County's form was league winning form for about a couple of months there. And I don't think anybody in this league, if they had to try and keep up with them, would have been able to do that, but probably Celtic.
Just going to wrap things up in a few minutes, but having yourself on, Matt, why is there such an echo? Hold on. Is that better?
I think so.
Aye.
Just going to wrap things up in a few minutes, but having a esteemed author like yourself on, Matt, you brought to the end the One Step Beyond fanzine at the end of last season, many successful books that I think both myself and Jay have enjoyed. What's next in your line of Motherwell FC projects?
I'm having a rest. To be perfectly honest, I'm having a rest. I've started working in my mate's shop, and it's a full-time job, whereas before I used to work part-time hours, which gave me the opportunity to produce so many books and the fanzine on a regular basis. I was in a lucky position for 20 years where I was self-employed and I had the time that I could devote to the projects. But now I'm just like everybody else. I'm working 9 to 5, and when I come in at night, I'm quite happy to put the feet up and just watch rubbish TV and maybe catch up with my emails and stuff like that. So there's one or two things that I've been talking about with people, but I don't know if I would really have the time to do them. I'm supposed to be working on a project regards my first book, the Saturday Service Day one. Guy wants to try and do a screenplay for that, which trying to work that around about my work is very, very difficult. So it brings it into focus that I don't really have the time for those kind of things anymore, because you need to sit down and get yourself mentally attuned before you actually start doing it. By which time it's probably bedtime for me, you know, because I'm 50 now, you know, I need to get my beauty sleep. So, to be honest, I don't see anything else happening in that front. I would like it to, because I had a few plans before I got this job, that I really wanted to do something different for football, if you can understand that. I know Motherwell's been my life. Always has been since I was a kid. I mean, I used to sit in primary five and make wee drawings what I think the new Motherwell kit should be, and then send that away to Fir Park and hope somebody actually listened to me at one point. They never did. But, you know, even from a young age, I was just totally obsessed with Motherwell, claret and amber, you know, the whole thing up by, it's just in the blood. And, you know, I've took that, I think, probably as far as I could go. And I think I'll just leave the Motherwell-related books as they are. I think I want to try and do something in a different genre, probably, if I do ever get time to do anything else. To be honest, I don't see it. I think I'm just going to retire gracefully for that scene. But you know me, mate, you never know.
Speaking of upcoming things, when's the long-awaited Well Trust FC reunion match? This has been spoken about for years.
Oh, we'll need to speak to Flo about that, won't we?
Aye, it needs to happen.
I mean, I'd be delighted because that was a great time. That was, what, 7 years we had of that, Jay, was that right?
Aye, 7 years, and I think it was only the last season that you started putting me at right back rather than left back.
Aye, well, you know, when you're ambidextrous like that.
Aye, terrible on both feet.
So there you go, he's held that grudge over his 6 year playing
period. I'm just like Matt, I hold a grudge.
No, I think it's a shout, Jay, because we've spoke about it, and these kind of things, you know, all the boys involved, they always speak about it, but nobody actually takes up the cudgel and actually does it. I know we had intentions last year, and again, it was mentioned last week. Maybe if we'd kept on talking about it in between times, and we could have got it organised. But it's not that difficult to organise. It just depends what we want to do. I know the guys were talking about trying to get a game up by, and that's probably more difficult to organise than anything else. But we can go and hire a Daisy Park and just retire to a suitable hostelry once we're finished, Jay. We don't need somebody to organise that for us. We can do that ourselves. Okay. So I'm up for that anyway. I'm actually playing. I'm pulling the boots back on next week because I've been taking Villa Park Boys Club, my boys' team, since Well Trust finished for the last 5 years. And we've got a parents versus boys game next week, which I'm pulling the boots on for. So that'll be a laugh. If you want to laugh at me, get yourself up there next Sunday and we can have a couple of drinks in the club and discuss the Well Trust reunion. How's about that?
I might do, actually, aye. That sounds like a plan.
Yeah. That's what you think. Covo Park, 2 p.m. Get yourself up there.
We've been discussing anniversaries. 130 years the club has been in existence for now, as of today, and also 24 years since that fantastic day in May, the 4-3 win over Dundee United in the Scottish Cup.
Aye.
Final, the 30th episode of the podcast today. Really, Jay, there's many momentous days in the calendar, but this is tops them all off, especially the 30th podcast.
Oh, aye, even just to get to 3 was quite an achievement, so to get to 30 is quite something.
Can I say I'm quite honoured to be a part of that?
Well, we couldn't have had anyone else on, Matt, we couldn't have.
Absolutely. Super.
You've been listening to the By The Min MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.